Coming to you from Syracuse, New York, it's the Real Deal Podcast with your hosts, Ian Phillips and Cassie Lee Grimaldi.
Welcome once again to the Real Deal Podcast. My name is Ian Phillips. I write about movies, I talk about movies, I watch movies, TV too, just about everything movies. I'm here as always with my co-host, Cassie Lee Grimaldi.
Hey, Cassie. Hi, I'm Cassie. You can say the Lee if you want, but it's okay. You don't have to. I do all the same things. I think Ian has his introduction a little more down pat, but I watch movies and TV and I like them too. And now I'm here with you talking about them.
And we are going to use our combined brain power to talk about this week's biggest movies, TV shows, news we find interesting. This week, the movie we'll talk about later in the show is David Gordon Green's latest feature, Joe. We're going to start off, as always, with news. One big story this week is that David Fincher, who for a long time everybody thought was going to direct the Aaron Sorkin pen Steve Jobs biopic, dropped out this week after a dispute with the studio. Apparently, he was asking for $10 million and a lot of control over the marketing. The part I found most interesting about this was Fincher asking for control over the marketing, because I feel like that's not normally what a director does.
Yeah, I don't think that's really a director's job, but David Fincher, I think, David Fincher is sort of a brand in itself.
Yes.
So, and so is Aaron Sorkin, and so is Aaron Sorkin and David Fincher together.
And Steve Jobs as well, those are all kind of brands. And also, his movies do have really good marketing. I'm just thinking about, like, the Social Network trailer with the, like, you can't get to 500 million friends without making some enemies, which everything is ripped off now.
Oh, my God, right? Yeah. But, yeah, the Social Network was sort of, like, was that their first?
Yeah, that was the first. That's the only thing him and Sorkin have done together so far, but there should be more. It would be fitting if they did a Steve Jobs movie.
Yeah, but,
So they're lost to lose Fincher. But something.
And also the great movie Jobs, starring Ashton Kutcher.
And Josh Gad.
Yeah.
I have not seen that. I've read some reviews that make
it's on
me
Netflix.
Have you seen it?
No.
it looks, I heard it's just basically a giant ad for Steve Jobs, which sounds like not like a Steve Jobs movie. But something I found interesting about this story was some executive who remained nameless was basically saying one of the reasons that this was not cool of Fincher was because this Jobs movie is not something, I'm loosely quoting him, he said, this is not Transformers, this is not Captain America, this is quality, it's not screaming commerciality.
I think that every movie needs marketing in some form.
Yes.
So, I mean, it's definitely not a Transformers movie, it would have, and I don't think David Fincher makes Transformers-like movies.
Isn't Steve Jobs bigger than Transformers, kind of? Like, he did found Apple.
It depends on who you ask.
Yes, that's true. But it just seems kind of weird. It also just makes me see, like, what's the difference between, like, movies and TV right now is that people who are producing movies are thinking that way, that a project with Steve Jobs is not meant to be a commercial project.
Yeah, that's insane to me. But speaking of commercials...
Oh, good seg there.
Oh, thank you so much. The trailer for Obvious Child starring Jenny Slate came out this week, and it looks really, really good.
This was a big hit at Sundance. Jenny Slate in it plays a young woman who gets pregnant accidentally one night, and the movie's about her grappling with whether to get an abortion or not. I personally watched the trailer four times since it first came out. It reminds me that sometimes a good trailer you can just watch over and over again, like a good movie.
Yeah. It looks like a nice little indie rom-com, which I'm a fan of. Yeah.
I forget that rom-coms can be good when you do them right.
Rom-coms are so good, Ian.
I know, I need to. I did back in February for Valentine's Day. I watched some to try and get into it. It's good. It can be good sometimes. I just like this. I really am a big fan of Jenny Slate. I know you are too.
I love her.
We're both very big fans of Kroll Show, in which she plays, like, half the characters on it.
Yeah, and Marcel the Shell,
of course. And she was on Saturday Night Live and got fired, which is one of the worst things I think Lorne Michaels has ever done.
Yeah, but she's making a big comeback, so...
Exactly, she's doing really well on her own.
Yeah.
I also really like when people who are big stars on TV will take a break and do an indie movie like this. If you saw Kings of Summer, that had, like, Nick Offerman and Megan Mullally in it.
Yeah.
And all these other people that are big on TV doing an indie comedy. It was great.
Yeah.
Okay, that was a short news segment. There wasn't a lot of news this week, probably because everybody was busy watching Game of Thrones. We're going to go to analog this right now, and the first thing we're going to talk about is the Fargo pilot, which premiered on FX this Wednesday. Cassie and I both watched it. Now, Cassie, have you seen the original Fargo movie?
I have, but I actually haven't seen it in a few years, so I kind of wish that I should have watched it right before I watched the pilot, but you know, who has the time? Not me.
You know, I've seen it enough times that I know it. They're like, it's one of those Coen Brothers movies you kind of just know so well. And the show is a loose take on it. It uses the setting, some of the ideas.
It actually doesn't use the setting.
It's
Bemidji, Minnesota.
Which I don't know if it's a real town, but it sounds like. It's probably not a real town, but it sounds like the kind of name the Coen brothers would come up with, something really ridiculous like that.
Yeah.
But Cassie, what did you think of the first episode?
I really liked it. It started off very, I think it set the tone really well. Mm-hmm. I think that tone-wise in general, that it did really well in terms of borrowing that aspect from the Coen brothers movie. Mm-hmm. But I really liked that it was also completely different. Like, I don't think people should go into watching this and expecting an adaptation. It's less of an adaptation, actually, and more of, like,
continuation of the world.
A continuation of the world and sort of, like, borrowing the set pieces and the tone.
That is exactly right. I actually read that, I think, but, like, Billy Bob Thornton said that he'd seen the Fargo movie, but he avoided watching it before the show because he didn't want to try and be stealing things. He knew it was a completely new idea. And I really thought this was a very strong first episode. It was an hour and 37 minutes long, which it was basically like a mini movie. And this whole season is supposed to be a 10-hour movie, which is what the creator and everybody involved has said.
And it's not going to be more than one season, right?
It might. They're talking about possibly being like a True Detective or American Horror Story like anthology, which is suddenly becoming a really big thing right now.
Yeah, it's like the next big movement in TV, I think.
But this is coming from a Coen Brothers fan. I think I never thought anybody else could capture the Coen Brothers perfectly. Like, just their tone, their worldview, and this show really got it.
Isn't that funny, though? Because the guy who directed the pilot had only ever really directed episodes of, Bones.
It was Noah Hawley directed the pilot, right?
I think so.
That is very interesting. The Coen brothers were executive producers on this project, but it doesn't necessarily mean they had a lot of involvement. It just could also mean they just gave their blessing,
and
basically.
Got the credit.
No, but either way, I guess they thought, oh, Joel and Ethan Coen are in charge. We need to treat them with some respect.
Yeah.
But like the start of the show, it's like the Fargo is kind of like something funny about it is it says at the beginning, this is all based on true events, and it actually happens that none of Fargo is based on real events.
Yeah.
And the beginning of the Fargo TV show, it's really, if you know that going in, it's kind of funny because they're like, this is based on true events. This all happened. These are all real characters. And it kind of keeps going. I couldn't stop laughing at that.
Yeah, there was like three cards. It was like, out of the respect for the survivors, out of respect for the dead. Like, I was like, oh my God.
They just kept going on. Yeah. I was like, this show knows exactly what it's talking about from the beginning. And what'd you think of the actors on it?
I really was a fan of Alison Tolman, who plays the cop who's sort of supposed
Marge Gunderson.
Yeah. She was the character's also called Molly in this, but she wasn't really I didn't think she was too similar to Marge Gunderson. I feel like the way that Frances McDormand plays Marge in the movies is very specific.
Yes.
And so is this performance. So I thought they were similar, but specific enough in their own way to be different.
Completely different. That's what's like for most of the characters. Like Martin Freeman, his character is named Lester Nygaard, and he's supposed to be very much doing an impression of William H. Macy from Fargo.
It definitely starts that way, but as you get into the character, it fades away.
He's a much darker character, and you kind of realize he's a little less naive than Jerry Lundegaard is, and kind of more aware of the bad things going on around him. I hate to compare it to this, but, like, in ways, I'm not saying it's as good, but it reminded me of the Breaking Bad pilot, or it kind of has that exact same ambition of taking a character you wouldn't expect to be bad and completely turning them.
At near the end of the episode when he's We won't spoil it.
We won't spoil it. We'll talk vaguely.
But when he has to make that decision and mm-hmm. he sort of just charges yes. right into it, that was such a great moment. And it was very Walter White-esque.
Yes. And this show does some really, in the first episode, does some really brave decisions with its characters, which you would not expect. We won't spoil it. You'll see and you'll probably know what we're talking about. But I have no idea where it's going. And one more thing also, Billy Bob Thornton, really, really great in this.
He was really good, and he reminded me a lot of the character from No Country for Old.
Thinking the same thing. My first thought I had was that he was Anton Chigurh, but with like a little more of a sense of humor.
Yeah.
But I couldn't really, his intentions were so bizarre. Weird in this episode.
Yeah.
It just seems like he's the kind of guy who gets mad when people get taken advantage of and like tries to help them with their problems in an unspoken way.
He's definitely like spinning some weird webs with his interaction with Sam. Is that the character, the bully character?
Yes.
With his children, and like, it was very, very interesting. And also, yes. Kate Walsh was in this show, and what did you think of her performance? Because it was very odd.
It wasn't like, I don't know why, it wasn't the thing that stood out to me most in the episode. I don't know, she played, what's her character's name?
I don't remember her name, but it's Sam's wife.
Yes. No, it was very odd. She didn't seem like a Minnesota character. She seemed like somebody who was like brought there.
Yeah.
Like, she probably married him somewhere else. I'm not really sure, but yes, you're right. It was very odd.
Yeah. Actually, I think she said that she was brought there.
But and yeah, she was like, what am I doing in this, like, frozen wasteland or whatever.
But her performance was edited really weird, where she,
what do you mean?
I noticed this, like, three times where they would start her on, like, a blank face, and then she would start laughing or, like, start saying her line before she was brought into it. So it seemed really purposeful, so
I'm going to have to keep an eye out for that next time. I think this pilot...
That was like my one film thing that I noticed about this.
Good catch. Good eye. That's something I'll have to look out for when I watch this again. But while this week this show was just starting, Community ended its fifth season.
Yeah.
Season finale was last night.
Six
seasons and a movie. It seems like they are very, very close to living in that reality. Even if Dan Harmon is also busy with Rick and Morty, he will definitely make that happen.
Yeah, that also ended this week.
But some background, yes, it did. I got to catch up on that. That'll be a topic for later. But but so basically with Community, Dan Harmon was fired at the end of season three. They brought in two new showrunners. The show had a very lackluster fourth season. I don't entirely blame the showrunners because they were trying very hard to do something with somebody else's vision, but Dan Harmon came back at the beginning of this season, and this season they really brought it, returned the show to form. It was like some of the best episodes
in a while
they've had. And that, so last night was the finale. Once again, they have to save Greendale.
Yes, as always.
What did you think of the finale in terms of the whole season as an individual episode?
I think it was really cool that they basically set up the finale with one episode that came before
it. That's true.
Because they were doing a lot of sort of like theme episodes and sort of earlier in the season they were like dealing with Donald Glover leaving and sort of the build up to that.
Chase being gone.
Yeah, so
they had to deal with a lot. This show like has to deal with a lot of problems, like. And they always just tackle it. The writers there are amazing.
Yeah, they're really great. It built up from the previous episode when the last episode before this was so good. It was like basic storytelling or something.
Yes, it's called Basic Story.
Yeah.
And if you've ever had to write a screenplay or taken a screenwriting class, then you'd relate to this episode
a lot. Oh my gosh, it was so great.
So good.
So they went through, and the conflicts seemed to appear out of nowhere, but it was very cognizant of that, and because there was no season build up to the huge conflict, which was Subway, the sandwich shop, was buying Greendale Community College, which was sort of the final battle of the season finale episode.
Yes. They did that in like season three. They had a lot of stuff with Subway. It's kind of like a meta outside joke, like the show has a lot of. But one thing it was like weird how it just kind of came with no buildup. And I'm kind of a fan of like cable comedies and how they'll have much shorter seasons, because a lot of times on a broadcast show, when you have like 25 episodes a season, there's going to be a lot of bad episodes. But I honestly think community might have benefited this season from more than 13 episodes, because this show is so ambitious. They want to do so much. They have so much story. I really wish there was more there. Like, what we had was so good, and yeah. I think they could have done more, and that would have made the finale even better to me.
Yeah. I mean, I love Community because it ties in these things from years past mm-hmm. that happened in the background of scenes that were just such
yes.
minor details that are just so good.
They brought back the Abed and Annie will they, won't they last
yes.
night for like a second.
Yes. Oh, that was good.
Yes, that was. And I just love like the little, they have like this, the references they do on the show. Like, reference heavy shows can be bad because they don't always age well, but they're so random and specific. And like when you get it, it just, they just won last night where the Dean just goes, this is not an Office 1 hour. This is not
oh
1 hour
God.
Episode of The Office.
That
I
was my favorite.
Killed me.
That was my favorite.
Because I remember when they always did those 1 hour episodes of The Office.
Yes.
And all that. And then they had a lot of stuff with the Goonies, which they only did a little bit of, but then they had a lot of jokes about the 70s.
Yeah.
If you want to joke about Elliot Gould and Donald Sutherland.
And which one's hotter.
You've got
it's
it.
Donald Sutherland, right?
That's what they said. That's what the Dean,
and
Dean and
Jeff
both
said in unison.
On. Yes. I didn't realize that was Chris Elliott until the end of the episode.
Oh,
That was
I didn't realize.
No,
that.
I mean, in the credits, I was like, oh, yeah, that's Chris Elliott.
Because
in
the
like
pictures,
him.
It looks like Jim Rash in a beard. And then he
that's
starts
what I thought.
Talking,
I thought,
and I'm like, wait, who is it?
I thought they were going to have Jim Rash play, like, two different Deans, because that would have made some sense. It would have been funny. It was just, but then it was not Jim Rash at all. I think it was just the glasses that fooled
yeah.
me.
Agreed. And the pointy nose.
Yes, exactly. Those, I guess a lot of people can have those two
so
things.
So we won't spoil it for our producer, Nick, but.
Yeah. By the way, I just want to point out quickly that our producer, Nick, is wearing a North Dakota State University shirt, and it says Fargo on there. These are some things you can't see on a podcast. Well, you can't see anything on a podcast. You can just hear things, because that's how podcasts work. But anyway, I'm really happy that he wore that shirt today. I thought it was very fitting, and I want to know where I can get one, too.
Maybe yeah, University of North Dakota. North Dakota.
I guess we got to make a trip
out
there.
Look at their online bookstore.
Maybe we can do yeah. a live show there. We'll see what the traction for The Real Deal is in North Dakota.
Yeah.
I'm sure we've got some fans out
yeah,
there.
Yeah, maybe our moms will move there.
Okay. So we're going to move on now. We can't wait for Community next season. We're all hoping for 6 seasons in a movie, but now we're going to move on and talk about Game of Thrones. We're really sorry. We're going to have to go into spoiler territory again. I swear we're not going to do this every week, but this week was an incredibly important episode. I think by now most people probably know what happens, but just in case, we're going to say spoiler alert. If you haven't watched this episode yet or you plan on watching it in the future, just skip ahead to when we talk about Joe. Okay, Cassie, so on this week's episode, something happened that we've all been waiting for since probably season one. Joffrey died, finally.
Yeah, he did.
He did. He was poisoned a very violent way. People who read the books were all like waiting for this to happen. I had no idea.
Yeah.
How did you feel when it happened?
I wasn't expecting it, to be honest. I was half expecting it and half not expecting it, because honestly, they haven't done a lot with Joffrey recently mm-hmm. at the end of last season. Or I feel bad saying the beginning of this season, but like the previous episode, but there wasn't a lot yeah. with him in the later parts of season. What season?
Season three. That was season
yeah,
three. Was
that
last season.
Three.
This is
season
four.
Oh, losing track of time
no,
here.
Those are hard.
Time flies.
Yeah, but I think I had a feeling that he was gonna that like this season would finally be the one that would do him in, but I couldn't believe they just did it in episode two. Like, this seems like most of the seasons of Game of Thrones, like the episode before the finale, there'll be some major death or turning point, and you'd think that would be an event for a close to season finale. They did in the second episode. There's 8 more episodes to go
yeah.
still.
I hope that things keep happening. It's weird how we think about Game of Thrones episodes being good when someone important dies. It's so sad.
It is. I mean, that's weird because the show has a way of doing it. This episode was also penned by George R. R. Martin, who has still not been finishing the books, but he wrote this episode, and it seemed like a perfect episode for him to write.
Yeah. He seems like he would be really interesting to talk to, but
yes, he does.
He just has no remorse for his characters.
No.
I don't think he even really likes him that much.
But I think we talked about this last week, though, how like some character, like he likes the fact that you'll like a character one episode and hate them the next. Yeah. Joffrey is the only character on Game of Thrones
Everyone
that I've never liked.
Hates.
He consistently hates. He did that on purpose, I think. But this was also the one time where there was like a major character death, and you like it actually felt satisfying and cathartic.
Yeah. It was great. I think I was texting you when it was happening. I was like, oh my God, yeah, like I couldn't.
I was like waiting. I watched it before a lot of people, and I was like waiting to talk to people about it.
Yeah.
And it seems like also the conversation got lost this week because more people were talking about how mad they were that they were spoiled by it as opposed to what their reaction was.
We live in a spoiler culture.
Yes, we do.
We really
and
do.
This comes from me who just said spoiler alert like 3 or 4 times before saying this. It's just what our culture is.
There was actually an article, I think, on Vulture or...
I think it might have been one.
About how to change your Twitter settings so you can escape spoilers from certain keywords, not just hashtags. So, like, people who don't hashtag and like to spoil things.
Those people are...
Yeah.
There was one website that...
So look that up on Vulture.
I think it was Mashable. I'm calling them out. Like, 1 minute after the show ended, was like, what did you guys think of Joffrey's death? And it's like, come on, wait, like, a little while at least.
Yeah. So, yeah.
The only thing crueler than Joffrey is people who spoil his death.
Yes. Oh, that was a good one-liner.
Okay, and one thing I do want to talk about. So, there was some mystery at the end as to who... poison him, and you did some research, and you have some thoughts and theories that are really interesting. Neither of us have read the books. We've not read ahead. We do not know, but Cassie, can you please take this away?
Okay.
It's really interesting.
So, I wanted to know why it was called The Purple Wedding, and so I was, like, Googling, because when he dies, it's called The Purple Wedding in respect to the Red Wedding, which killed a bunch of the Starks. Sorry, spoiler alert, but I mean, if you made it this far,
then you
get
know.
Real. But
we're spoiling the past now.
Yeah. So it's supposedly called the Purple Wedding because his face turns purple when Joffrey chokes to death on his own vomit and dies.
Why am I laughing at that?
However, in the season premiere of season 4, I forget his name, but the court fool meets Sansa in the garden, which is sort of like the Tyrell territory on King's Landing, and he gives her this necklace with purple crystals.
Snap.
Yeah. And so Sansa wears this to the royal wedding of Margaery Tyrell and King Joffrey. So Elena Tyrell, who if you don't know is like, she's one of my favorite characters.
She's a really awesome character.
Yeah, she's just great. She just has great lines, mm-hmm. and I suggest that if you haven't been paying attention,
you should pay attention. She's like the wisest character on the show.
So she goes over to Sansa, pats her on the collarbone, and there's some screenshots of this on Reddit and some people who disagree. But she, for sure, takes one of the purple crystals off. Like, that's indisputable. Mm-hmm. The crystal is gone. And after she walks back to her seat, or before she does, she says to Sansa, who would kill a man at a wedding? It's just, like, terrible or something.
Foreshadowing.
Yeah, and so I'm not sure if Sansa's in on it or not because of the way she said that.
There was the guy that came up to her at the end and said, like, you need to get out of here.
Yeah, if you want to live.
And she didn't look that... surprise, like for somebody who's been tormented by Joffrey, she didn't look that shocked when he died.
Exactly.
I don't remember. What was Margaery's reaction
like? She was shocked, but she's also really conniving. Yeah. Okay.
So
Elena goes back to the table, and then there's like a 3-minute cutaway from Elena, so she has plenty of time to drop this crystal, which is supposedly a poison called the Strangler, which comes from a purple crystallized plant that grows in Westeros. And
keep going.
I sound so nerdy, but it's okay.
Game of Thrones brings out the nerdy everyone.
Yeah, it does. And so there's a long cutaway, which would have given her plenty of time to drop this in Joffrey's wine.
Thank God for editing, allowing people to go and murder people.
Exactly. And so then Joffrey drinks this wine. And then he dies and chokes. So my theory is that a conspiracy between the court jester, Sansa, and the Tyrells killed Joffrey.
I think that's right.
And the crystal.
I still don't know if Marjorie's involved, but there's definitely a conspiracy with all... Marjorie
doesn't want to be queen. She wants to be the queen.
She wants to be the queen.
And that's a direct quote.
Who's going to be the... Is there going to be a different king now, or is it just going to be...
I don't know. I think the hand of the king will assume the role, so Tywin Lannister will be in the role of the king for...
You know, I used to hate Tywin Lannister, and
he's a great character.
He is. I think it was in the season 3 finale. There's this whole part where he explains to Tyrion about how he could have murdered him as a child, but decided to let him live, and like it was a really amazing moment. And that's another example of Game of Thrones taking a character you hate and giving them so much depth that you can't hate them anymore.
Yeah. So yeah.
Yeah.
What else is there to say?
Baratheon's bastard for king.
Have we seen Gendry this season?
I don't think we have yet. There's so many Davos, characters that we lose. He's with Davos. There's so many characters now on the show that like they can't even approach. They can't even have every single one. So there might at some point have
Arya
to be another.
Arya wasn't in this episode at all.
No, she was not, which is a disappointment because Arya and the Hound are the greatest. Yeah, like we said last week, they're
True
they're
Detective
really
season
awesome.
2.
Exactly, True Detective season 2. I really thought that it was going to be Arya that killed Joffrey off, but I had like predictions about how it's like I think I said this before, but like I felt like a sociopath when Joffrey dies. I was like, he could have died all these different ways that I was thinking of.
Oh, and you know what else I just thought of?
What?
In season 1, when Jon Arryn, the first Hand of the King, dies, they say that poison is a woman's weapon.
Wow. That's a good callback.
Dun, dun, dun.
Cassie just blew the roof off Game of Thrones. She didn't even read the book and she figured that out.
I read the first 3.
You did?
Yes.
Oh, okay. My mistake. So you read the one that... Wait, so did you...
After the Red Wedding happened, I was like, I can't let these things spoil. But then I only got to the Red Wedding.
And then you stopped. Okay, yeah. So you haven't seen any of the stuff from this current season
No,
yet.
But maybe I'll start again now that the summer is coming. And
I really
have time.
Summer is in coming.
Yes, summer is coming.
Now that the summer... I think it's going to have to be summer reading
so
for
winter
me.
Winter can come into my brain.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay, well. Everybody... I actually didn't hear what you just said. I just was trying to think of a segue.
Oh, that was not good.
No, it's okay.
Redact it.
Redact All right, well, redact what she just said. I didn't hear it, but just redact what she just said. All right, everybody. Well, that brings us to the end of our TV talk for the week, Analog This. We're going to take a very quick break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about Joe. The movie, not a person.
But also a character.
Same. Yes. Welcome back to the Real Deal Podcast. It's time for Real Talk, where we review one new movie this week. This week we are going to talk about Joe, which is the latest feature from David Gordon Green, who you might know from Pineapple Express, Your Highness, George Washington, All the Real Girls. This is a movie that basically has little to no plot, so I'm just going to go and read the one sentence on IMDb and take it from there. So Joe is about an ex-con who is the unlikeliest of role models, meets a 15-year-old boy, and is faced with the choice of redemption or ruin.
Ruin.
Ruin. So, Cassie, what did you think of Joe?
I didn't like Joe. I'm just going to put that out there.
Same. I think I'm going to have to agree with you there.
2 thumbs down.
So, Joe was not... I was very interested in this movie, partly because David Gordon Green, I have mixed feelings about him, but... He always does something different and something kind of weird that I like, whether or not it's a Seth Rogen comedy or like a tiny indie movie that takes place in like entirely in a forest. He always does something interesting, but this movie he didn't do anything new. It was very unoriginal.
It was totally unoriginal, totally derivative, and I see where he was trying to borrow from influences as well as... I mean, it was adapted from a novel, so...
Okay, yeah.
And so I feel like it was probably a very cerebral in Joe's head novel. I haven't read it.
That would have been a little more interesting, actually. I feel like just something if it was in his head.
But that's also really hard to adapt, so it kind of really fizzled out from the get-go.
Yeah, it did. And there's every movie, like, the last movie David Gordon Green did was called Prince Avalanche, which I had mixed feelings on. I know a lot of people liked it, but I had the same problems with Joe as I did with Prince Avalanche, as in it takes a really long time to get to the story. And I'm okay with movies taking their time to get to the story and exploring the space, that's fine. But like when 1 hour feels like 2.5, that's not a good thing.
Yeah, I was begging for this movie to end. And not only did it take a long time for the story to start, but the main character, Joe, was so erratic and inconsistent mm-hmm. that it took a really long time to get to know the character. Yes.
This is definitely a character study, and I like character studies, but this is a good example of a character study gone wrong.
Yeah, for sure.
Like, you can't really have a good character study if all the characters are complete cliches.
Oh my gosh. Yeah,
let's talk about the Southern cliches. We were having a big discussion before about how movies that take place in the South have kind of become a genre, and like the same way that like movies set in Boston yeah. is also kind of a genre. And this one, like, it can be good sometimes. Like Mud's a good movie. True Detective, which is on TV, is an awesome show, but this one did nothing new with it. Like, what were the cliches you saw?
Mostly in the character and the settings and the interactions. I think Joe's very based on the Western hero who's mm-hmm. like the bad boy cowboy with the troubled past. He's strong and silent, but Joe's strong, but he's silent.
Barely.
He's like trying to repress. He doesn't really ever say what it is, but he's always just like, you know how I get. I don't want to get involved.
And no, we don't know how you get. We don't yeah, know who you are.
Yeah, exactly.
But no, I can see that. They do actually mention A Fistful of Dollars at one point, and they're kind of building up. Like, I saw that as, like, a Western influence, but also another thing, he's very inspired by, like, anti-hero characters of the day. Of, like today there's a lot of big anti-heroes. Like, it's especially big on TV. Like, this guy who's not necessarily likable. But I think the problem is that they try and make him likable despite...
Yeah, from the beginning, they're like, oh, look at, he gives a job to black people. Like, oh my God. Like, it's such, like, a white savior trope. It's stupid.
That is another big trope. And also, every, like, major...
Gotcha.
You got me. I'll get you, I swear.
Ian's
I will.
Trying to make me laugh really hard today.
That I haven't even pulled out my best ammo yet. Maybe I have, I don't know. But anyway, like, every Southern cliche character is here. There's an old coot with no teeth who drinks a lot.
And
there's
punches his son in the face.
Yeah, abusive father. There's an old Southern lady who sounds like she just, like, ate an entire carton of cigarettes.
Yeah, or swallowed a bullfrog, either way.
Everyone's, like, everybody is drinking beer or whiskey.
And there's hookers with hearts of gold.
Yes, tons of hookers with hearts of gold.
Who are there to be the flying buttresses for Nicolas Cage.
There's a lot of white guilt in this movie.
Oh my God.
I didn't even think about it until you brought it up now, but there is a ton of white guilt streaming through Joe. And it doesn't even seem like a story that should, but it does.
It does. And it also really marginalizes poor rural whites in the
yes.
South really, really badly, which a lot of movies do, and it's so one-dimensional, and it could have been such a more interesting story if the characters had more layers, and mm-hmm. Joe, who's supposed to be this main character, has layers, but they're kind of like Legos. They're like, they're not like.
Just a reminder, the Lego movie is much better than this one.
Yeah.
But okay, one thing I want to go back to is what you were saying about the Southern cliche of these poor people. And I feel like movies do not acknowledge that the South is a very different place than what we know. Like, I feel like this is like a 1920s or like pre-civil like rights view of the South. Like, the South is a very different place today. There are places like that they show in Joe, and then there's cities like Atlanta and Nashville that are very modern places, and people from all over the country go and live there. It's not a totally insular place anymore. It's not just Deliverance.
Yeah.
But lost my train of. But I think one thing this is, I'm going to bring up Harold and Kumar Escape from Guantanamo Bay right now, just because there's a part where they go to the South and they meet this one redneck guy, and they're really afraid for their lives, and they think he's gonna be all these things, and they go to his house. And he lives in, like, this very nice place with, like, new technology, and, like, they eat really good food and all this stuff. It's not just, like, them skinning a deer.
Which happens in Joe. When he's like, girl, look, I made a butterfly steak.
He does do that at one... That is another... They're just them chopping up a deer at one point.
It's just like, why?
But I just,
why,
my,
Joe?
My whole point there...
It. You're self-sufficient.
My whole point there is that a Harold and Kumar sequel is more progressive than a movie by David Gordon Green, who I think is from the South, too. Yeah. Also, we're trying to figure out the whole movie. Where does this take place? I had to look really closely, and I figured out that it takes place in Texas. This is a movie that it seems like you need to know really well, like, the place that it's about. It's very regionally aware, yet it doesn't acknowledge where it is at all. It could be anywhere in the South, but, like, Texas is different, Louisiana's different, Tennessee's a different place.
Yeah.
But one thing I think we do need to talk about when we talk about Joe is Nicolas Cage. Because this seemed like it was going to be... Okay, so Nick Cage... I need to give some background. Nick Cage is definitely one of the most interesting people in Hollywood. Like, that's why he's become such a meme on the internet and so endlessly fascinating. They did an amazing episode in Community this season where Abed takes a class trying to figure out whether Nicolas Cage is a good actor or a bad actor. He won an Academy Award for leaving Las Vegas. I almost said Leaving Las Vegas. That was not on purpose. But yeah, he's won an Academy Award, and he's both a horrible actor and a great actor. It depends on the script. Like, adaptation, Raising Arizona, Kick-Ass. I don't know, am I forgetting any great ones? And then he's
done Leaving Las Vegas.
I haven't actually seen Leaving Las Vegas. Moonstruck, you love Moonstruck,
I love
right?
Moonstruck. He's so good in Moonstruck.
Yes. The point is, he knows how to be a good actor when given the right script. I still love Con Air. I'll defend that movie to the death, The Rock. But the whole point I'm trying to make is that this seemed like a movie that maybe might have been a comeback for Nick Cage, because he will basically star in any movie now, because in real life he's broke because he bought a lot of things like rattlesnake venom and he outbid Leonardo DiCaprio for dinosaur fossils. This is all true stuff, and he went bankrupt, and I think that's why he's done so many bad movies. So I thought, oh, he's doing an indie movie now. Maybe this is something he actually cares about. But this was not a great Nicolas Cage performance, I thought.
No, it wasn't. And I think a lot of people thought it was going to be just because it was done in the style of True Detective. And
then it was just an indie movie in general. You'd assume, like, oh, he was doing it for no money. So, like, he must have cared about it. Like, maybe he was trying to pull a Matthew McConaughey here.
He already had his McConaughey moment. He won an Oscar in 1996.
That's true. So does that mean that Matthew McConaughey is going to become the next Nick Cage in the future?
It could be.
I hope not. McConaughey's on a roll right now. But anyway, Nick Cage, like, when he hams it up, he hams it up. And he did it so much in this movie that, like, I don't know if... Like, David Gordon Green can direct comedy, so I don't know if he was trying for intentional comedy. But there's a scene where Nick Cage actually yells, I like dogs. I just hate this dog. He's an asshole.
Yeah. And then he goes to get his dog, who kills the other dog, who's an asshole.
Spoiler alert, maybe. Yeah. Yes.
Don't see this movie. Not spoiler alert.
We will spoil it because we hate it.
Oh, my God.
No, but... Yeah,
which is terrible.
It's too... Like, Nick Cage, I was, like, kind of hoping he'd be more subdued. And I think after years of Ghost Rider movies, he's forgotten how to be subtle.
Yeah.
Like, he yells at cops, he yells at everybody, and, like, he does that thing where suddenly it sounds like where that Abed did in the Community episode, where he's suddenly, like, making noises like that. like he's completely lost control of himself and not in a good way.
Yeah, he's lost himself in the character.
One thing I will say I did, there was, like, a brief stretch of the movie that I actually started to like towards the second half. So it's about, like, the movie really wants to be about the relationship between Nick Cage's character Joe and Ty Sheridan, who plays the 15-year-old boy we mentioned. He was also in Mud.
But their relationship is weirdly at the core of this movie and weirdly...
Not.
Detached from the rest of the movie.
Because
so much dead space.
Yeah, you're right. They set it up at the beginning as in it's going to be about Nick Cage, like, training this kid and being a father figure to him. They forget about it, and then about an hour in, there's, like, a montage of them, like, trying to find Nick Cage's dog together, and they're, like, talking about life and stuff, and it's really...
It reminds me of them in the woods in Pineapple Express. Yes! Find the caterpillar and
that's
stuff.
That's my favorite part of Pineapple Express. No, but I love that one part of the movie. It belonged in a better movie.
It did. It didn't belong in this movie.
It was, like, something that was, like, funny and, like, light, but, like, also had some seriousness to it. What was the thing you said about the lighter?
Oh, yeah. He was, like, training,
Ty Sheridan
to, like, get girls, and he had, like, this Zippo lighter, like, this lighter with a metal case, and he was, like, he flicks it open, he's like, see that sound? Hookers get excited, because they know you have money for a Zippo lighter. And I'm like, oh.
I really wish that was the whole movie. I enjoyed watching that. It was way too brief a stretch. It had a great music in the background.
Yeah.
Everything like that, but it lasted for like a very short amount of time.
Yeah.
Like it forgot about itself.
Yeah, and then the main climax of this movie is all of a sudden the abusive father decides to
get his son. He wants his money.
He gets his money, and then he wants to sell the daughter as like a prostitute. Jeez. And which came out of nowhere.
That's not heavy-handed at all.
It came out of nowhere. And then Joe has to prove himself by saving the daughter.
He basically, like, this. It's basically...
From a guy he punched in the face once.
Have you seen Mud?
No, I haven't.
Okay, well, it's basically, like, that's the climax of Mud is almost exactly like this. I liked Mud, I'm not the biggest fan of it, but either way, they just... Where, like, it looked like they were just taking notes during Mud, but they're like, how do we make this more melodramatic?
Yeah.
The whole thing. And then, like, the ending, they keep using these, like, visual, like, metaphors, it seems like, and it's just so heavy-handed. It's like, oh, they're planting a tree at the end.
Okay, so the job that Nicolas Cage had at the beginning was cutting down trees, and at the end, after, spoiler alert, Joe gets shot in trying to save Ty Sheridan's family... And he dies, and so then he applies for another job where they're planting trees.
Oh, it all makes sense now. It comes full circle.
Yeah. But you got that, right?
Yes, I got that. I just had to clarify for the rest of the audience that's called full circle.
Yeah.
What do you think of David? Have you seen any of David Gordon Green's movies besides, like, Pineapple Express and...
I saw Prince Avalanche and Your Highness.
He takes, like, a Terrence Malick approach, and, like, when he does indie movies like this, he just likes to shoot, like... sunlight coming through trees and like leaves and stuff, and it's a little
eye roll.
There was an eye roll there, which is something that didn't come through on the podcast. Yeah. Just, like, you know, there was an eye roll there, but yes, it was like it just feels kind of thrown in. I feel like David Gordon Green half wants to be a director and half just wants to shoot leaves. it's true, and it's like I feel like I know people who are really big fans of him, and I feel like I should like him more. Let me say, I love Pineapple Express. That's, like, actually one of my favorite movies.
It's one of my favorites,
too. It's so, because, like, he uses, like, that kind of, like, his normal directing style, but there's, like, a good story behind it.
Yeah,
like,
that he didn't write. He also didn't write the script. We should be fair.
Yeah, he didn't write Joe.
Yeah.
But, like, his directing, I think, was actually, it's hard to see when directing is a problem and when it's not, because there's so much behind directing that we don't know. You've made that point to me before. But, like, still, you could just tell that, like, it seems like he didn't have a clear grip over this story.
Yeah, it appears that the screenwriter of this movie, Gary Hawkins, this is one of his first features that got made. So,
I guess he has a ways to go. Yeah. Maybe use less Southern cliches next time.
Yeah.
You know? Do you have any other thoughts on Joe you'd like to say?
Thumbs down.
Yeah, thumbs down for Joe. But if you really are curious, Joe is available in select theaters and on iTunes and Amazon Prime, where you will have to pay a little bit of a fee to watch it. It's about $6.99 for some reason.
For a rental.
I think Nymphomaniac costs less than this. I don't know how the iTunes rentals works. Should probably investigate that and find out.
I don't either.
But either way, don't see Joe. All right, that wraps up our review of Joe. We're going to take another quick break, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to the Real Deal Podcast, everyone. This is the final part of the show where, as always, we will have a question of the week, which we will answer, and hopefully you will too. This week's question, is heaven for real? No, I'm just kidding. I told you, I'll try and get you with something. Okay, that's not the real question of the week. The real question of the week, what movie would you like to see adapted into a TV show?
Yeah.
This is kind of a tricky one because you don't want to say just any movie you like. It would be a movie, like, it has to be very specific, like Fargo, where...
I just had a really good one.
What do you have?
Rushmore.
Oh, that is good.
About Rushmore School.
About Rushmore, would it just be about Max Fisher, or...
It would be about, like, a Max Fisher type.
a Max Fisher type another. Yes, because yeah. That's good on these shows when instead of doing the original character, they have somebody similar, just like on Fart. Just like we were talking about in Fargo.
Fart.
Did I say Fart? Fardo?
Fardo.
Fardo? That would be...
The
that
Fart
would
be parody of
the
Fargo.
The Fart parody of Fargo. Guys, please don't steal that. I'm really desperate for ideas now. I think I'm going to have to do that. I'll put that on my resume.
Okay.
Fardo. Fardo. Okay, so... That's the question of the week. I would say the answer for mine would be this is the end, just because I would totally love to see a TV show that just Seth Rogen, Jay Baruchel, James Franco, all of them just being themselves.
Freaks and Geeks?
Yeah, exactly. I mean...
Undeclared?
Basically Freaks and Geeks and Undeclared. I want to see them both on... I was getting there. I was getting there. You read my mind, as always. But the point is that I think at this point they've all, like, it's so hard to disassociate them from who they are in real life that, like, they might as well just keep doing movies as themselves or a TV show. And I've always wanted to see Freaks and Geeks and Undeclared come back on the air, and I don't feel like start doing a Kickstarter campaign. So I think the closest is just have them be back on TV every week being themselves.
Yeah, Judd Apatow always says that he said in this one interview that he loves, like, that's why he wrote This Is 40. He loves, like, characters coming back and, like, telling their story again. Like, if you could see, like, his favorite characters from different movies in a sequel that had nothing to do with the original, just, like, living their life, he would, like, that'd be, like, his favorite movie
ever. That would be. Yeah. Is that
so? Maybe he'd be into that.
You had another movie, though, you said before you want a TV show.
Oh, yeah.
You should say it.
Almost Famous would be a really good TV show about journalism, because there's not really any good TV shows about journalism.
No, you're right. The Newsroom.
Yeah, did you see Inside Amy Schumer's?
No, it was like about...
The Food Room?
Right after we're done recording, I'm going to watch that. But no, that would be a really good idea. That, or it just follows a band in the 70s.
Yeah.
And Jason Lee, get him back on TV.
Yeah, the 70s are a good period.
It is. There's a lot of interesting stuff. I forgot to mention, last night in Community, there was a lot of jokes about the 70s.
Yes.
No, leave no pet rock unturned, as they said. Oh, I love that. So anyway, if you have an interesting show or a movie you'd like to contribute, that you think should be a TV show, as always, send an email to Ian@realdealblog.com with your answer. And if we get some good ones, we'll read it on the show. We also have last week's question is still available, which was, who would you like to see replace the Colbert Report? So you can also answer that as well. One more thing we'd like to say. We are available on iTunes now, not just on the website. So now you can get us on your phone. It's really easy to listen to.
In your car.
Yeah.
In your workouts.
On the train.
Yeah.
Anywhere you want.
Maybe not on a plane.
Maybe not on a plane.
Yeah, you need the internet.
Although you can download it before and then you won't need internet. But some planes have Wi-Fi now.
Yeah.
And but don't bring in the shower, because water ruins phones.
It does.
So, yeah.
And iPods.
So not necessarily everywhere. But one perk of listening to iTunes is if you do, you can have a review. You can put a review up. So far we've gotten one, and it's a 5-star review.
Ferrero.
Anyway, his review is smart and funny. A lot of fun to listen to.
With 2 exclamation points.
And let me just point out that N. Ferrero is our producer, Nick Ferrero.
Yeah.
Yes, he doesn't like to compliment us in person. He just likes to kind of yell at... He'll just yell at us all the time. He just leaves the nice compliments to online, and we don't really know what his tone is or if he's sarcastic or not. It's a very intimidating environment we work in.
Send help.
Yes, thank you. You can add more. You can add your own 5-star reviews. You can subscribe. You can still listen through the website. Before we wrap up, Cassie, is there anything you'd like to say anywhere that you can find your writing?
Oh, yeah. You can follow me on Twitter @CassieGrimaldi, CassieGrimaldi. It's long to spell, but it's important.
She's at Midnight Verified. Certified.
Yeah, totally. Changed my life. And you can read my column on Tuesdays in the Daily Orange about pop culture. It's called Living Vicariously Through You. So, yeah.
And as always, you can follow me on Twitter @Ian, IAN0592. And you can read my writing on The Real Deal, realdealblog.com. That's real, R-E-E-L. And then the rest of the words spelled like you would normally think to spell them. All right, everybody. Thanks for joining us this week. It was a lot of fun. As always,
keep it real.
One more time. Wait, on the count of three. One, two, three. Keep it real. How was that? Yes, so there was like a thing that happened. We can't spoil it. Wait, I started too early. Blooper reel.
They're both nice.
Yeah, they are. A redwood that could have a redwood that could grow bagels on it would be really cool.
They might be really high up.
Yeah. Oh, that's true. It's not good for me.
Or any human.
No.
Just mainly Ian.
Just me.